I've been tossing and turning because I wanted to have a conversation that I feel like highlights and contributes to why Black Lives Matter and why the support for Black lives is imperative in terms of moving forward in fighting for real legislation and change. And I've recorded this episode about 6 times, and I've become certainly drained having this conversation, because there are a lot of internal community issues that I'm seeing amongst the Black community that is challenging in terms of us being able to achieve liberation. And then there are a lot of external community conversations pertaining to the Black community and where we go from here. So I wanted to take the time today to specifically talk about the uprisings and the death of Black lives, and how being Black in America is definitely a death sentence. Now, you've heard me on the podcast rant about capitalism. You heard me rant about racial issues, what it means to be Black at work, dealing in a space of feeling very overwhelmed and not heard. You've heard me talk about my experiences as a Black woman and what even inspired me to get into policy work. And so I want to be able to provide some tools and resources for individuals who want to join the movement for Black lives, number one, want to thoroughly prioritize the movement, number two, and number three, want to continue to expand their education. I hope, as every conversation we have on the Broke Black Bougie podcast is fruitful and meaningful and helps you to cross the journeys that you desire. Politicking with y'all today, I want to say that entering this conversation is very hard for me. And the reason why it's very hard is because I've sat with these emotions since I was a kid. And oftentimes I find myself triggered throughout the day, being a Black body, feeling like my life is on the line every time I go outside, and having to show up in spaces and keep professionalism and talk about life and what it means to be, oh my God, a creative, or to produce work and producing through mourning, producing and putting on a strong Black face in order to get through the day and disrupt any other bullshit. Like, being Black and existing in itself is extremely fucking hard. And what's harder is having to produce labor during this time and create content and work that helps to foster narratives, right? And foster conversations about what matters. And I think when I look at the Broke Black Bougie platform, this is something that I've been doing. But it's extremely frustrating because even though these are conversations that have been held, what I'm starting to unpack and understand is that a lot of my frustration is rooted in the fact that it's taking people so long to catch up. And now people are asking questions like, how are you doing? When there have been Black lynchings well before these 4 terrible deaths that have happened during quarantine. And so when I was triggered 2 weeks ago, right, 5 months ago over deaths that happened, I'm just wondering why there were no questions then. And although I understand that people become politicized at different spaces, I just need people to be more gentle with Black lives, because life is not gentle for Black lives. And so as we go into this, I just want to be as transparent as possible that I'm very fucking fed up, that I move through the world with understanding that Black lives matter, right? And Black lives need to matter, and we need to burn down systems, and we need to disrupt systems in order to reach a point of true liberation in our lives. and understanding young Cookie, right? And yes, you know, my nickname growing up was Cookie. So understanding young Cookie and my perspective regarding race, and thinking about how respectability politics was embedded into me, thinking about how we were often told to act a certain way, to be treated a certain way, and then uncovering the reality that no matter how we act, no matter how respectful we are, no matter how we show face, we will always be considered a threat or a problem, especially when we want to address these issues, because it's breaking someone's privilege, it's going against the system, and it's fighting for real change. With that being said, I think it's extremely important as we get in and start to unpack my emotions surrounding the lynchings of these Black lives. What's important to me is that I create a space where we can talk about some action plans, and we can talk about support, and we can talk about what's really needed to move this forward. There will be rants included in between, because you know how I do. I have to talk my rants, I have to talk my shit to get it out there. But more so than that, I think this will be beneficial to a lot of Black bodies who are on the same level as me in terms of what we need to do for our community in unpacking how we are going to move forward. I decided to break this up into sections because I feel like it will be easier to have this conversation, and I want to have this conversation and separate it so that it can be more thorough and easier for you to follow as a listener. So the first thing I'm going to start off with is the conversation on being productive during this time of Black death and why it is extremely hard. And I'm going to use my experience as a Black body as an example. So for the past couple of months, I think April and May have been extremely hard for me to maneuver, because I've been thinking a lot about how COVID has impacted Black communities. I've been thinking about how systemically all the issues that have existed within the Black community, we've taken a long time to address as a society. And there is specific reason for that. There is specific structure and institutional, right, reasons why these issues exist. And so I started to reflect on how to reclaim the work that is needed and what I need to do to help, right, in terms of pushing the fight towards liberation forward. And that's been challenging because every week there's been a new Black death that has popped up, and nobody is really taking the time, right, whether it's in workspaces or outside, other than other people in my community who feel it, to say, hey, what's up? What do you need? It's been extremely challenging. And so I found myself taking mental health days in those months, not having any other reason but to just need breather. You know, I need breathing room. I need to be able to breathe. My heart is racing. I am scared. I am emotionally drained. And I feel like every place that I'm in has contributed to some form of anti-Blackness and systemic issues, and really not doing the work to catapult the process of liberation forward. So when we operate in spaces like this, what is it that our communities need in order to get to where we need to go, which is ultimately liberation? I've been fighting these types of conversations. I've been thinking about them a lot. And recently, surfing the internet, there was a post that was made by a Black woman. I'm going to it right now. I have some stuff up that I've been reading. And that article is titled, Maintaining Professionalism in the Age of Black Death is a Lot. It was written by Shaniqua Golding, and she talks about her experiences as a Black woman witnessing the lynching of a Black man and still having to show face and produce the best work, right? And how that contributes to the narrative of being a Black body and told we have to be 4 times better just to get equal amount of respect as someone who is not like us. And in particular, we're talking about the relationship between white and Black bodies. In order to compete, we got to be 4 times better. And she spoke a lot to my emotions. And so I just wanted to take the time to read the passage and unpack a little bit. So she says, "Your Black employees are exhausted. Your Black employees are scared. Your Black employees are crying in between meetings. Your Black employees have mentally checked out. Your Black employees are putting on a performance. Forgive us if our work is not up to par. We just saw a lynching. Pardon us if we're quiet in Zoom meetings. We're wondering if we'll be the next hashtag. Spare us some grace if we're not at the company happy hour because the hour of joy that most adults look forward to has been stolen from us due to the recent string of Black death. We're biting our tongues, swallowing our rage, and fighting back tears to remain professional because expressing that hurt caused by witnessing Black death is considered more unprofessional than Black men and women actually being killed. So if you can, please be mindful. Your Black employees are dealing with a lot." It was hard for me to unpack that because I didn't have the space to unpack it. And what I've been witnessing is a lot of me being on go and a lot of other individuals like myself being told to be on go, but we are never able to be on pause and figure out what the fuck it is that we need to do to make sure that we are good. And so in that sense, I've found it really challenging to even talk about it within my workspace. Right? Because I'm at the point where I don't want to do talking. I want to know what actions are being taken to address this in our communities. And it goes beyond policies. It goes down breaking down structures that have existed in our foundation forever. And what are we going to do to make sure that the lives of Black bodies are safe and that they have what they need to live equitable lives? That they're not starving, that their pockets are not strained, that their children are not dying, that Black mothers are not dying early due to medical racism, that individuals are not incarcerated because of their fucking skin or because they are looked to as being more of a threat. And that me going outside, I don't have to worry about being shot the fuck down or being told that I'm talking illiterate or that I'm not up to par or people being surprised that I have a fucking education. I'm tired. What are we doing? And a lot of individuals will worship government positions. They worship nonprofit work. They worship anything that pays a salary, but don't realize how these jobs that we serve a part of, right? Whether we work for a government institution, whether we work for a nonprofit, or whether we work for ourselves, none of that has ever protected Black lives. And so what we're seeing now is we're seeing individuals who are afraid to speak out, who are afraid to say what's going on because they don't want to be deemed unprofessional. They don't want to lose their fucking jobs and their livelihood. They want to be able to still have some type of stability, but they're afraid because they know when you go against systems that are problematic, you become the fucking problem. And so there are a lot of people who are my family and who are my friends who are going through it. They're tired. They're emotionally drained. We're calling each other and we can't call on the people that actually need to create the work because they're unavailable or they're not being genuine about how to actually support those in need. And so I find myself not only taking mental health days, but questioning what spaces really accept me? What spaces care about my Black life? What have individuals done to ensure, all right, ensure that another innocent Black death never happens again? I've been going through it. And it's been a very heavy couple of months for me. And these past 2 weeks have been extremely hard because I watched the video of George Floyd, and I shouldn't have, because it brought up the same emotions of watching Eric Garner and the helplessness I felt and the images that I felt inside of me looking and seeing any black man that I've known on their bodies. Then came Tony McDade, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, who was one of the earlier killings of this year. I'm emotionally fucking drained, okay? And I don't have time for professionalism. I don't have time for respectability politics to not be perceived as a threat, because no matter how I operate in this world, my blackness is going to be considered a threat and a problem. So I might as well operate in this world in a way that is going to help put in the work that I need to see to propel us towards liberation. I think jobs have a particular role to play in supporting black lives who work and produce for them. Because as you know, the wealth inequality gap is very huge in comparison to white bodies and black lives. And as you move up the social ladder, and even as you go down the social ladder, looking at different economic classes, this still rings true. And so the issue that we saw a lot during COVID, and that we saw definitely through the uprisings, is that black bodies are not making enough. That black lives are being lost at a rate that we've seen, especially in my community, I've seen all the time. But there are more people coming out and saying that this is wrong. And I think employers have to play a part in speaking up, speaking out, and leaning into the work. Not just saying that, you know, we have counselor services open. Not just saying that, you know, you could do X, Y, and Z. We have a real commitment. A real commitment that is needed on behalf of Black lives. And so, in order to do this work, we have to be in a space where we, number one, acknowledge the roles that your place of work, how it contributes to oppression and the experiences that Black bodies face. It's as simple as that. You have to acknowledge the way you as an employer do that. If you are a part of an institution, such as a government agency, any place that is authoritative, it is extremely important for you to recognize the history that ties to this place, its oppression, why there aren't a lot of Black bodies in these spaces, and why they're often underrepresented. Number one, you need to unpack your voice and the narratives that the government chooses. Because we tend to be like, oh, this is, we're bipartisan on this, or this is a bipartisan issue. And there are spaces at work where people don't listen to Black women. There are spaces at work where people have to check with everybody, before coming to a Black body in order to validate things that Black people are saying. We have conversations about what it means to understand race and racist history, in the workspace, and there are individuals who head are so far up their ass, they think that they are liberated and they are as far away from white supremacy and white supremacist ideology because they've donated, because they have Black friends, and because they consider themselves to be activists in their own right, and it's fucking fraudulent.
it's fraudulent because it's not leaning into the community. It's fraudulent because it is extremely oppressive to Black voices. It's fraudulent because they sincerely don't give a fuck and they walk the line between being racist and being anti-racist every day. They're not as trustworthy as they appear. And so in that context and understanding those experiences, it's really important to unpack those things. The reason being is because labor, institutions of labor, are often founded on oppressive structures. And when we look at labor in this country, it is the labor that built globalization and westernization, the free labor of Black lives who built textile industries up in the North and built agriculture in the South. And so when we sit here to have these conversations, we're doing ourselves a disservice to talk about the way labor shows up in our workspaces. Not only do Black lives have to produce, right, in order to make it and succeed in be able to spread our voices, we're oftentimes dealing with the fuckery of people who ask for more labor than needed to help them unpack their racist ideologies, why they're a problem, and asking people to teach them what is already available. That's another problem we have to address when it comes to professionalism in the workplace and why exerting extra labor is a fucking problem. It is.
When I look at the roles that people are taking in the protests, I think it's extremely problematic that there are individuals policing Black folks on how to deal with their genocide. First things first, I've seen a lot of conversations around what it means to be an animal, and we're never going to get the treatment we deserve if we continue to act like this. Nobody is hearing us. And I think it's completely wrong and problematic as fuck, because in order to be heard, you got to go against the grain. You may got to do some illegal things in order to create a motherfucking change. And what we've seen that history teaches us is that a lot of our ancestors rebelled against systems, broke down systems, went against the grain in order to have a piece of what they considered liberation. Even if it wasn't the full extent of liberation of Black bodies, they pushed the baton forward so that we can get here. And it is our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to win. And we must push that fucking baton forward for generations after us. So, for instance, what does that look like? When you had enslaved Black bodies who were renting to their freedom, when they were freeing themselves, freeing other people, coming back and grabbing more, that was very much so illegal during the time because we were considered chattel. We were enslaved. And so I'm pretty sure to a lot of individuals, what they were doing didn't make sense. What they were doing was going to cause trauma to individuals who were living in our plantation's headquarters. And the only difference between now and then is that we can pick our plantation. We can pick where we want to work. We can pick the type of spaces we endure, even if we don't really understand to the full capacity how that space will create anti-Blackness or what it means, right? We are still at a place where work feels very oppressive for Black lives. And so when we look at what our enslaved ancestors have done, and even post-enslavement, how we were fighting for our freedom to go into buildings, exist, be able to eat and sleep in certain places, and not have to be pushed off into spaces on the basis of our skin, right, and our identities. Those sit-ins, those bus rides, those walks, those taking money out of systems, that were oppressive was very much a part of the fight of liberation. Those sit-ins were illegal. Sitting in the front of the bus was illegal. Drinking out of water fountains that said white only was illegal. Doing illegal shit has never been anything different from what we see now. Breaking and looting and doing shit to rile up the movement, burning shit down, burning systems down, have always been a part of the movement. It is embedded in the movement. It is embedded in the work. And that is what creates change. Revolting creates change. When we look at rebellions, that creates change. When we look at enslaved rebellions, let's really unpack this, because I think a lot of people take this shit as a joke, and it's not a joke. And the reason why it's not a joke is because when you understand revolts that were made, it becomes a lot clearer as to like why we have arrived into certain spaces. So, and America, some of the revolts that have existed was the San Miguel de Guadalupe revolt from 1526, the Bayayos War, 1548, Gaspar Yanga's revolt, right? New York slave revolt of 1712, Samba's rebellion, Stono's rebellion, the New York slave insurrection of 1741. And when we don't know these things, we tend to always think that like, oh my God, no, there's only one right way in order to obtain freedom. There's only one way in order to create change, and that's through peace. And history has told us that peace does not always bring change. And there are moments that cause for peace. Like there are moments that call for peace, but anger and uproars and uprisings, okay, are very fundamental to change and receiving what it is that people desire. When you go against systems, that's when people start to listen, because they recognize that certain things are not right. And so I think it's very important as Black bodies to recognize that and open our lens to what history has taught us. Furthermore, I think it's extremely important that when we talk about violence, violence is not something that is of our community, that has come from us. Okay? Those narratives were taught and oppressed and fixated on a particular community because of the messages that the media teaches us, what social media details, right? And how narratives are often changed. So when we think about uproars, a lot of this shit has come from, if we're going to be real about it, has come from history on race riots, right? And white destruction of Black communities simply because Black lives were progressing at a rate where we were working towards our liberation and getting things that we desire. And as a result, it resulted in white flight. It resulted in the burnings of Black lives and more Black deaths. It resulted in whites not being happy about desegregation, right? And creating very uncomfortable spaces for Black lives. And another thing that contributes to this understanding is that businesses and windows do not mean more than Black lives. What we've seen in the wake of COVID is that economies opened up as people were dying. Okay, as people were dying and we see more than 100,000 folks lost their lives, economies were still opened up because society said that, hey, businesses and having the economy run matters more than these lives that are lost. That's what it felt like, right? And so imagine going through years of genocide and being told that you're ruining businesses. Our fucking lives have been ruined. We've been traumatized. We've been going back and forth. And you mean to tell me a few little broken windows is a fucking problem to you? A few broken windows is a fucking problem to you. And you're more concerned about these economies than you are with the black lives that have been lynched in 20 fucking 20 and the lives that have been lost. That is mind-boggling to me. So I don't give a damn. I don't give a damn for the businesses that are in the hood and that treat the black bodies like shit, that walk in, that tell them that they're being too ghetto, that tell individuals, oh, you're not like them, you're different. You know, that come into our hoods and take our money and don't give a fuck about the oppressive systems that exist against us, and they also contribute to that. Fuck them. I don't give a fuck about black businesses that exist in the hood that are a part of the problem, that geek narratives that are extremely problematic and feed into white supremacy and the systems of racism that already exist. I don't give a fuck. What happens in war? Casualties happen. All right. There are some business owners that have understood that, you know, this is bigger than what we're dealing with. I sincerely appreciate that, you know, we're having these conversations. This is how I'm going to contribute to it. Right. There are businesses that understood that it's not about their business. It's more, it's bigger than that. It's about the movement. It's about lives. It's about survival. It's about really taking the time to be like, what are we going to do to make sure that this oppression ends? Okay? Seriously. Those are the type of conversations that have been existing. There are businesses that have deliberately put on their windows that this is a black-owned business or yada, 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 and I support Black Lives Matter. Those are important. Those are symbolic to the movement and what individuals can actually do. Then there have been the other ones that have been extremely problematic and more focused on classism than actually what the fuck is going on in their communities, and I don't have time for it. I think everything that I've witnessed so far is a message of, I'm not going to argue with individuals that Harriet would have shot. And the reason why I'm not going to argue with them is because this is hectic, right? This is literally life or death. And for many of us, we're trying to figure out how to move this forward beyond having a conversation and chanting and saying we need liberation. Like, what are the steps we're going to take to get there? That is the time that we are on. And so you are either for the liberation of black lives and for the freedom, okay, of the oppressed, or you are against it. There is no in between. This, at this point, I can't have people who are in between, because that means you are comfortable with the system that you exist and thrive in and you don't want nobody else to eat. That means you are too concerned about being fragile, being on the tiptoes of the system and not wanting to bend or do anything that's bad. Nobody got time for that shit. And you are on the side of keeping those exploited and down. And once again, I'm not arguing with people that Harriet would have shot. The ways you can get involved. Protesting is not easy. It's not for everyone, especially for those who don't have the ability to walk back and forth or move back and forth without having some type of health emergency or mental health trigger. Like, I get it. Being on the front lines is extremely important. Like, I enjoyed protesting ever since a kid. I remember doing advocacy work and really being passionate about showing up and showing out for issues that impacted my community. Case in point, as I got older, I decided that I wanted to commit my life to creating change and figuring out how to foster narratives that help open up an avenue in my community where we're able to focus on things that we desire for our lives and for the future little black babies. And I say all of this to say that the state that we are in now, I think a lot of people tend to question what it means to protest, what it means to protest, what it means to have a voice, what it means to be persistent And it can be extremely challenging because historically we've seen protesters shift the lives of individuals and how we live. We want to talk about the new normal. We never, for Black lives, have ever lived under anything that was normal. And so the work that our ancestors did to push us forward to be able to live where we're at now is the work that we have to continue to do to continue to elevate and really work towards Black liberation. So 50 years down the line, right, Black lives are not being targeted and killed in the fashion that they are now. But the good thing about what we know about what good old white supremacy and the good thing about history is that things tend to repeat themselves in different forms. And until we put our foot down to actually create the lives that we want and actually demand change, change will not come simply because people are comfortable living free and living under the privileges that exist. So, with that being said, there are different roles you can take in a protest or outside of a protest that helps to do the work of liberation. Number one is reading more, okay? Reading and educating yourself on what's happening, all right? There are different ways you can educate yourself. You can educate yourself in conversation. You can educate yourself by looking at documentaries. You can even educate yourself being an individual that reads some literature focused on Black bodies, all right? Whether it's your Audre Lorde, your Ta-Nehisi Coates, your Damon Youngs, your Catherine Caruthers. There are different things that you can do to help to educate yourself and ensure that you understand how things are full circle. Because what's about history? It repeats itself. That's what we know. That's what we understand. History repeats itself. Shit happens. And so we are doing ourselves a disservice if we refuse to understand how all of these pieces connect and unpack homogenous communities that have existed post-enslavement, how money in the Black community has worked, right? How policing ourselves has worked, okay? Dismantling systems of needing police. All of these narratives have existed beforehand. We don't need academia to confirm or deny it, simply because academia in itself can be a very oppressive institution, and that's a conversation for another time. But moral to the story is do the work. It exists. It's out there. The great thing about it is I love to research. So if I find myself being an individual that comes across information that can be beneficial to a community of people, Black organizers, people who are on the ground, I would submit that work to them to help inform, okay, or help shape the work that they see fit. Or I would call all the organizers to see what work it is that you need on your ground and how can this be beneficial to you and what work can I do. All right. If I'm not protesting, what other things I can do? What other people can I connect to the movement? Okay. In what ways can I help set up educational sessions or work with people, especially in my own family, to help get them on board to the work that needs to be committed? That is all a part of researching, educating yourself, and putting yourself out there so you can work through and be able to connect the dots. The challenges that come with this, though, is that you're going to be reading a lot of material that can be extremely sad, okay? That can dampen your mood, that can be triggering. So it's important that when you're in these spaces, you have to make sure you have enough of what you need. You're taking space in between to make sure you're getting your mental health up there so that these issues are not going to be taxing on your spirit. They always are going to be taxing on your spirit, especially for Black lives. But you have to do something to help keep your mood consistent, right? And so one of those things that I do is I'll rest in between projects, literally rest, take a nap. I'll eat some food, I'll go for a walk, just to clear my mind for me to reaffirm my purpose and why I'm doing the work. Aside from that, another thing you can do to educate yourself all right, to educate yourself on what's happening and what you need, is to, what was I thinking about? You should talk to elders. Talk to elders. Because this is an intergenerational movement, and sometimes our elders' perception on what we need can be very trying to the direction we are trying to go. Because the way that they responded, or the work that they've done back in the day, we cannot take the same exact technique. We can learn from it, but it might not be the same exact technique that will work now. So it's very important for you to have a conversation with them, because you need to know how you show up into this space and what this means for you 20, 30 years down the line, on the path towards liberation and creating change. All right. Another thing you can do if you're not showing up to the protests, is to create signs and give them to people who are going to be present at the protests, or try to figure out a space or a safe hub for individuals to come back and decompress, right? I think that's the right word. Yeah, or debrief on what is happening, what's going on. It's very important that you can be able to create that space for individuals, so we can have a point to create action points for the next event that will be happening, the next action, or figuring out how we shift, right, our voices as protesters and as people of who have voices that are unheard, to get really loud in the sense of demanding change for those who have power. All right, so creating those spaces are important. Providing food, providing water, okay, keeping people energized is just as important to the movement, right? Whether you are somebody who is in it walking, or you are on the outside and you can be able to contribute, those things are important, okay? I'm forgetting what number we're on. We started off with one. We probably just said 6, 7, 11 things. So we're just going to keep it going. Another way you can be able to show up in the space of activism, right, is to watch. If you show up to a protest and you know the organizers, or you reach out to the organizers and you want to be able to assist, this is not about you showing that, oh my God, I'm down, I'm doing the work. No, you're doing the work because you want to do the work. This is about you coming there and crowd watching. Watching for people who are really not down for the movement, but are coming there with their own personal agendas. Watching individuals who may forcefully try to create violence against those who are protesting. Yeah, watching, creating safety teams, figuring out what the fuck is going on. Some people even go as far as watching the police. And they do so with the intentions of ensuring that they have voices, they have eyes and ears on the floor, just as the police do on the protesters. Because the real issue here is how police show up to protests in riot gear to incite violence. So it's very important that we keep a watchful eyes, ears, motion on them to ensure that other people's lives are intact. Okay? That's another thing you can do. I know there are some individuals who tend to bring milk down and markers down for individuals to write on their arms, information for individuals who, how can I explain this? When you go out to protest, there's a 50-50 chance that something can happen to you, right? And that's simply because not of the people around you, but certain individuals who are not there for the right purpose, right? Like, there have been people who are anti-Black, who are white, who show up to destroy and harm others. And there are individuals who are, how do I explain this? Law enforcement officials who are going down there with a purpose to harm. So it is very important that when you are going out to protest, to say your voice for anything, you should write on your arm names and numbers of individuals to contact. That reason being is that you don't forget, that you know numbers by heart, that you don't forget, and that you ensure that if anything happens to you, you can contact the right people to help either bail you out or make sure that there is a legal team surrounding you. Okay? Those things are important. So having the markers there are important to make sure that people have the information that they need semi-permanently written on them. And people who bring milk, it is extremely important because sometimes it gets a little shaky. And as a militant tactic, individuals such as the law enforcement that don't really enforce shit, the law terrorizers, we'll just, let's call them that, shoot tear gas out into the public and create such harm, all right, to those who are out there not creating a commotion. So in order to help your eyes, milk helps. Okay, not water, but milk. It helps when you're being shot with tear gas. And so it'll kind of calm the burning. It's very important to have milk out there. Those are just a few things you can do. Being actively involved in the movement, and if you are a leader in the movement and you're starting a protest, it's important for you to understand that there's power in numbers. There's power in being able to lead, and disorganization in movements can be very harmful for reaching a goal. There are a lot of individuals who take part in movements because they want to co-opt the movement or show that they're really down, but they are the most anti-Black beings, people of color, that I have ever met, okay? They are individuals who don't really care to listen to Black women when they have the opportunity to and show up into spaces and are just like, I'm here because I really care about it. It's like, sure you really care about this issue. You here for some limelight. And I've seen a lot of instances where people are showing up to protest. Sometimes they are the most violent individuals towards Black bodies outside of the protests. And so in the fight for liberation, we have to understand that sometimes individuals will show up who create issues for other people. And the fight for liberation, when we get it, will benefit everyone. It will benefit everyone. That's what you learn. Like, even if someone is not showing out or supporting or figuring out how they could be a part of the movement, when the demands will be met, when change comes, they will be some of the first people to benefit from the changes. But they might maybe also the individuals who didn't put any work in. They will benefit from the work. But there are individuals who show up with the intentions of wanting to be known, whether it's on the right side of history or wrong side of history, instead of wanting to dismantle the status quo and actually create a change. And the reason why it frustrates me so much is because those who are really putting in the work don't get their flowers the way they need to. But I say this to say, this is some of the ways you can get involved. I know that more of you, especially if you've organized before, if you've ever been a part of protests, if you've ever been on the front lines, have some insight as to what you can do to contribute to the movement. One of the things that I did not say that I should have said before concluding this part is resting and how important that is to the movement. Because when your body is not, when your body is not open, right? when your body is not resting, when your body is not getting the peace that it needs, it creates ways to force you to sit down. Whether that is stress that comes out in body aches, stress that comes out with inflammation, whatever it is, your body is going to tell you to sit down. And in moments of uprisings, we as Black bodies have to make it a priority to ensure that we are resting. Because when we don't rest, right, it makes it harder for us to achieve the things we desire and also make sure that we are healthy. And so we have to make it a mission to prioritize our lives in the fight for Black lives collectively. So if you're an individual that has been out protesting a week straight, or you've been out only protesting 3 days straight or 2 weekends straight, make time to give yourself a rest in between protests so you can figure out if you need a role switch, you can figure out how long you're going to be staying at certain events, you can figure out if you're going to get down with the safety team, if you're going to be an individual that helps to create a safe space, or if you're going to be the person that creates a room for people that they can just rest and rest. Sometimes you don't need to debrief. Sometimes you need to sleep, right, in order to propel your healing forward in the right direction. So remember that. There are many ways you can show up. There are many ways you can take care of others. You can take care of yourself, but you must take care of yourself first. Before closing out this episode, I want to say that for those who are directly impacted by what has happened, and in particular for Black lives, nobody can tell you how long it is for you to heal from this, because this is not something that blows over overnight, or just because a verdict comes out, we're satisfied with justice being served, because a lot of the emotions of mourning that we feel, a lot of the oppression that we are facing, it's intertwined. It's not just police brutality, it's poverty, it's education, you know, it's health, it's dealing with all of these structures as they intertwine together. And it's not just being mad at the incidents that we're seeing play in front of us, is being mad at the reasons why we are here. You know, I'm thinking a lot about Earth, Wind, and Fire, Reasons, the song. And we have to consistently ask ourselves the reasons why we are here, the reasons why we are seeing these images, the reasons why these narratives continue to be portrayed, the reasons why businesses are coming out and speaking out about Black Lives Matter. To me, I've never seen anything like this, but I can tell you that this world has definitely operated as profits over people. And even if it's something that these organizations haven't really believed, they operate as profits over people. And so it's okay to be frustrated and have one eye open towards these businesses that are speaking out about your life, and are saying that they stand with you, because it's been really hard to trust certain organizations. And we know that these organizations have never before really prioritized us. So it's okay to keep a watchful eye. It's okay to speak out and say that you're frustrated at individuals who appear and pop out to check in on you and say if you're okay. Individuals who have neglected your concerns, right? Individuals who didn't listen to you when you say that these things were going on and they were impacting you. And this time around, everybody is just all ears. It's okay to feel how you feel. Nobody has the right to police the way you react to the genocide that you're seeing in your community. Nobody has the right to tell you that you are less than because you decide that you're ready to fuck some shit up, because we are tired of being sick and tired. We've been politely asking for our lives to matter. And when you are unheard, when you consistently go through a space of being disregarded and having people make their own perceptions of what it means to be and live your life as a black body, you're gonna be hurt regardless. That's all I have to say. So I hope as we enter these next couple of weeks, as we unpack all of this black death, as we see more images and more stories and names come out of other people and their experiences, it is my hope that you protect your peace by any means. If it means staying off of social media, if it means not watching the news, if it means creating a safe space between you and your loved ones, do that. Because, as I said before, in terms of resting, we cannot be our best selves if we're not taking care of our mental. I know that we're going to have another conversation on this because I'm black and I'm not going to be un-black no time soon. So I'm going to be black 24/8 when I wake up, when I go to sleep. All right. When I take a shower, there's nothing that is going to detach me from this identity and understanding what blackness means in this world. And so with that being said, I look forward to talking to you all, on the next episode of the Broke Black Bougie podcast. And If you have the time, if you can hold on for 1 second, please be sure to follow on Instagram and Facebook, Broke Black Bougie. I have made postings of different sites you can support for Black Lives. One of those sites includes Vol Noir, which specifically focuses on serving marginalized genders and paying bills and making sure that children have food to eat across the country, okay? Even though Vol Noir is headquartered in New York, they do the work for the community all the way around. So I have a donation link that is up for PayPal for Vol Noir. I have a donation link that is up for COVID-19 food and housing security that is also based in New York. Where I currently live now is in Albany. And so most of this work is out of Albany and connecting with other organizers in Rochester and New York City. But these are definitely things you can support to keep the liberation movement forward. Emergency needs funds. I also have uploaded other links to support Black Lives. So Black Visions Collective, Reclaim the Block, Minnesota Freedom Fund, Justice for Tony McDay, Official George Floyd Memorial Fund, Justice for Breonna Taylor, and I Run with Ahmaud. It doesn't matter if these funds are already filled. Continue to donate. These communities are in need. And for real this time, I'm going to check out. But I thank you all for those who have genuinely checked in and have asked how I was doing and trying to figure out the space that we can operate in terms of this conversation. So thank you.